We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It is a gorgeous day in the Twin Cities. 82 degrees, wind out of the north at 8. A lot of sunshine and blue skies. 5:09 on a Sunday. Twins Weekend Review is underway. Eric Nelson with you. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll have a lot of highlights looking back at the three-game sweep in Kansas City. Yes, indeed. The Royals get it done. They get out the broom and sweep away the Twins down in Missouri. In the Show Me State, the Twins showed us very little, so we'll get into that later on in the program. Also, we'll give away some tickets to the July 31st Indians-Twins game at Target Field. But right now, out of the gate, joining us is a former Twins broadcaster, current Kansas City Royals voice on television, our good friend Ryan LaFever. And Ryan, always good to chat with you. I know it's been a long day, but for the Kansas City Royals, it was a pinnacle weekend. For the Minnesota Twins, it was probably the, you know, the lowest moment of the year. But for the Royals to get their first sweep, I know that gives them a little momentum, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Good to talk with you, Eric. It's we knew it was going to be a challenging year, and for different reasons, a lot of things have just not gone the way the Royals had planned, similar to the Twins. A lot of things have not gone as planned with injuries and players underperforming and all that. So we have that in common, but clearly the expectations were a lot higher in Minnesota. But yeah, not only was it our first sweep of the year, is the first series win for the Royals since they took 2 out of 3 from the Twins almost 2 months ago. So it's been a rough one up here, but our fans, I think, understand much more where we are compared to what the Twins fans were hoping for this year.
And baseball's a funny game, Ryan. You know it better than anybody. I mean, the Twins are 5-2 against Cleveland, the best team in the AL Central, but they can't beat Kansas City, who's at the bottom of the pack. So go figure.
Well, this is I'll be honest, this is the best series the Royals have played all year. I mean, I know if you're a Twins fan and you're hoping for the playoffs again this year and you get swept by the Royals, who have one of the worst records in the major leagues, I understand the feeling of, you know, is that the final dagger. But if the Royals were going to play their three best games of the season, you know, and we're almost 100 games into the season, they just played them. And, you know, I'll just give you from an outsider's point of view. I mean, number one, this is just not the team that the Twins figured that they were going to have. I mean, they've had injuries. You know that. The fans know that. And it's easier for me driving around in Missouri to look at it and say, well, you know, you had underperformances, you had injuries. And then, you know, another bigger picture perspective, and I learned this from Denny Matthews, who's our longtime radio voice, and this is his 50th year doing the Royals. And Denny, years and years ago, said something that holds true more than it doesn't. And that is, when a team makes a big leap forward out of the blue, like the Twins did last year, going from 100 losses to the wild card game, it's only human nature to expect more the next year. But more times than not, many, many, many more times than not, you're going to have a little bit of a backslide the next year, because the winning was unexpected, and now you start having expectations that aren't realistic. So there's always a little bit of, not always, but most of the time there's a backslide with a team like that. You know, this is not a gradual climb for the Twins. This is a huge, I mean, a historical leap forward. And then there's a little bit of a fallback, and then it's the year after that one where the team just kind of regroups. They've learned how to win. They've learned why they lost the year after that, and that's when you really have to watch out. So, again, I know it doesn't mean much from some guy driving around Missouri, but that's a trend that holds true.
Ryan LaFever, our guest here on the Twins Week in Review. He's the television play-by-play voice for the Kansas City Royals, who win today, cap off the three-game sweep of the Twins. The final count was 5-3. And Ryan, the key play came in the seventh inning. Drew Butera, a former Minnesota Twins catcher at the plate, and he hits one to center. Jake Cave comes in, dives for it, doesn't make the play, it gets by him, and Butera circles the bases with the inside the park home run. You're a former outfielder. You played center field for the Minnesota Gophers. I used to broadcast your games. Put us in Jake Cave's position, and Paul Molitor said afterwards, look, I'm happy he went for it. He rolled the dice. It didn't work out. Is that your mindset?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sometimes a guy dives for the ball and he has no chance and it skips by him. And it looks bad when he missed it, but that was the play to make. I mean, the Twins are not playing well. They, you know, as well as the Royals played in the series, the Twins just did not play well at all. And so if the Royals take the lead right there, it's just one run. But that's a big run late in the game. And I'm with Paul Molitor. I mean, broadcasting for the Royals, I mean, it was fun to watch that and the crowd react and the curtain call for Drew Butera. And it, you know, looks bad if you're a Twins fan. But if he makes that catch, that's huge. Now the Twins come up and they've got some momentum now. You know, they took a runaway, a potential runaway. But I really believe, Eric, that that was going to be more than just run, figuratively. Not literal. Literally, it's just one run. But I think that run late in the game for the Royals, you know, may have been enough. Now, of course, Kepler hits a home run, and I understand that could have retied the game. But who knows what happens if that ball drops. I think it was a good, aggressive play by Cave. And he just missed it. You know, it's not like he totally whiffed it by 10 feet, and you're going, what in the world is he doing? He came very close to making that catch.
Ryan, there literally was royalty in the Royal House today. Bo Jackson, who might be the greatest athlete I've ever seen, a former L.A. Raider, Kansas City Royal, among others, he shows up. And it's got to be, when you're around Bo, it almost has to be, there's just such a mystique around this guy.
I got to do a luncheon with him on Friday. He was there for some sponsors, and I did a Q&A with him for about 30 minutes. And, you know, Bo grew up with a stutter, and it comes out at times, but the way he describes it, I mean, he was afraid to speak, and he really did not aspire to be an athlete, but that's what his friends were doing, and he realized that it came to him naturally, and then he realized he could get a college education out of it, and then he realized he could make some money and it would open other opportunities. He's been incredibly successful as a businessman after his playing career, and I never really got a chance to spend a long format with Bo. You know, he'll come into town and we'll have him on the air for an inning or something like that. But he has such an interesting life. You know, he's the eighth of 10 kids, and, you know, never really wanted to play sports. And he's just a fascinating guy. And I mean, he was the Michael Jackson of his time. I mean, I don't know if there was a bigger worldwide popular athlete than Bo Jackson was at that time. But when you talk to him, he's just very humble, very modest. He doesn't get into, you know, I did this and I did that. But, you know, he ran up a wall. He threw a guy out from the warning track, broke a bat over his helmet. He bowled over Brian Bosworth on Monday Night Football. And he broke his hip and got it replaced and went back and played Major League Baseball and was the American League Comeback Player of the Year. I mean, it's just a remarkable story.
It is incredible. And I can remember, Ryan, as a young reporter working in Iowa, the L.A. Raiders went into Arrowhead to play the Kansas City Royals one day, and I drove down, and Bo Jackson took the field wearing number 34 in silver and black, and the Chiefs fans, who cheered him across the parking lot at the K, threw these little tiny plastic footballs at him. Bo was a Raider then, which meant you didn't like him.
He talked about that. I mean, it's just, you know, for a Minnesota fan, you play for the Twins for part of the year, and then you play for the Packers for the, you know, the second part of the year. I mean, it's a fierce rivalry here in Kansas City. But he told a funny story at that luncheon, Eric. He said, you know, I came back and after football, I took the field and I'm out there in left field, and he threw all those footballs on and they had to stop the game and get the footballs. And then a couple of innings later, I took the field and one guy threw a football in the field. So here come another 100 footballs. And he says, later in the game, though, I hit a 3-run home run to put the Royals in front, and I got a standing ovation. So, what have you done for me lately?
Indeed. And you wonder, you mentioned the hip injury. I can close my eyes and see that play. He was playing for the Raiders against Cincinnati, and it was a, you know, jet sweep left, and he broke down the sidelines and blew the hip out. If he doesn't have that injury, I think he's in the Hall of Fame in either football or baseball. I wonder if he would have gotten into both.
Well, you know, he said something, again, I go back to this luncheon. I mean, he just started talking. I just sat there listening. And again, you know, he's not he's not the most eloquent, easiest person to listen to in an interview, but when he has the microphone and he can just go, I mean, he's fascinating, his story. He said that he did not want to play professional sports past his mid-30s. He just didn't love it. He liked it, and he liked what came with it, but he just didn't love it. He wanted to be with his family. He wanted to take his kids to school, and as he put it, the man above answered his prayer and found a way to end his career. So I don't know what would have happened. I mean, I'm sure, you know, the money and a lot of enticing things would have kept him in the game longer than his heart wanted to be in the game. But he said that was his plan. He did not want to play past his mid-30s. And another story, you know, when he, in that game you're talking about, he was tackled by the ankle, and then he tried to lunge forward to get more runs, and his hip came out of socket. And he tells the story like somebody whose shoes came untied. He says, you know, I was on the ground, I realized my hip was out of socket, so I just jammed it back in there again so I could get off the field. I mean, who jams their hip back into place? Bo Jackson does.
Yeah.
He's a lucky guy. And obviously, you know, he was done. He couldn't play, you know, football after that. But, I mean, he had the presence of mind to understand what had happened and physically pop his hip back into socket again, or close to into socket again.
Incredible. Bo knew baseball, Mo knew football, and Bo knew a lot of other stuff. And before I let you go, Ryan, I know, again, it's been a busy day for you at the ballpark. Thanks
no
for
problem.
Joining us. Your old school, the U of M, made a great baseball run. They got to that super regional. They faced Oregon State, the eventual champs. And I know you had to be living vicariously through Coach John Anderson and Rob Fornasier, who's now in retirement. It had to be a thrill for you to watch it from afar.
Well, let me tell a little roundabout story here, Eric. When the Royals went to the World Series in 2014, there were a lot of former Royals, and I loved them. They were just really good guys, and they just played on a lot of bad teams. And when the Royals made it to the World Series, and here I am getting a chance to broadcast the World Series, and there's Mike Sweeney and Jeff Montgomery and Joe Randa and many others, and I just remember thinking, gosh, I just feel so bad for them that they didn't get to, you know, play this. And they had the best attitude in the world. They didn't complain. They were still so proud that the Royals were in the World Series. Well, I get it, because I never got to play. I got to play in three NCAA tournaments. I never got to play. They didn't have Super Regional back then, but I never got to play in Omaha. That was the goal. But you know what? I felt just like those guys did. I was so proud to have played at Minnesota for 4 years and just hanging on every pitch. I mean, I was in bed at night. Some of those games were late. I was in bed at night checking my phone to, you know, watch the count and score. And all of my college buddies with this long text thread, and they're updating us what's going on. And a lot of the guys were there. I mean, I wanted to be there so badly, and I was just so happy. I didn't need to be in uniform. I mean, I was just as proud as a fan as I would have been as a player. And for John, who spent most of his college career, you know, blowing the horn of northern schools getting to host regionals, because that's how you advance to the super regional. That's how you hit Omaha, and he finally got one. And for Rob Fornasier to be there. Rob Fornasier was the one who came and watched me play my high school game in Los Angeles and recommended me to John Anderson. So that was a heck of a ride for me, and I was a long, long way from Minneapolis when it was all going on.
Yeah, yeah, fun stuff. And, of course, I remember vividly broadcasting your final game as a Gopher with Larry Fitzgerald out in Tempe, Arizona at Arizona State. And then you off, you went to the minor leagues, and now you're in the major leagues calling games. So it's been a great run, Ryan.
See you later.
Absolutely. Recreate it. you have yourself a good week. I'm glad the Royals are getting a little better, but it's too bad it came at the Twins' expense.
Yeah, I can understand how everyone feels, but I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm not just saying this, but there's a lot of talent in that organization. And one of the reasons why the Royals felt like it was a good time to rebuild is not because of the Cleveland Indians, but it's because teams like the White Sox and the Twins have a lot of talent, and the Royals felt like it's time for them to rebuild because it's going to be the Twins and the White Sox time next. And unfortunately, you know, next isn't this year, but it's coming.
All right, thanks, Ryan.
You got it,
Eric. All right, Ryan Lefevre, Kansas City Royals broadcaster. Royals win it today over the Twins 5-3 down at Kauffman Stadium. We'll have much more coming up on the Twins Week in Review. We'll go down on the farm. Stevie T's got a special guest. We'll have highlights from the Kansas City series, and we'll also give away tickets to the Cleveland Indians game. They play the Twins on Tuesday night, July 31st, at Trendy Target Field. And we'll give those away here in a little bit to the to a lucky caller. It's 5:23 on the Twins Magazine Show on WCCO. -83 degrees, partly cloudy skies, wind out of the north at 8, 5:27 on the Twins Week in Review on a Sunday. Eric Nelson with you. Thanks for tuning us in. Minnesota and KC finish up their three-game weekend series as play resumes around the major leagues after the All-Star break. And the bottom-feeding Royals get out the broom and sweep the Twins right out of Missouri. In the show-me state, the Twins showed us very little. Maybe it was the presence of Bo Jackson, who showed up at Kauffman Stadium today. All right, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to the Cleveland-Minnesota game on Tuesday night, July 31st at Target Field. If you can identify the highlight of the week, we're going to play it now. You need to remember it because in a few minutes, I'm going to ask you to name the highlight of the week.
And long pause, and here's the pitch finally, and there's a line drive, base hit right center field. Rosario should make it to third easily, and he may be waved around. That ball's going to go to the warning track. Hitting third base, Rosario is being waved around. No throw to the plate. And a double by Dozier. Twins lead 1-0.
Yeah, and there is your highlight of the week. Really hard to find highlights when you don't have a win. But that's it. So write that one down or put it in your tablet or however you remember things these days. Also, we want to know who is your vote for the Twins Player of the Week. Again, not really any overwhelming candidates. You can text us at 81807. Here's who I'm going to nominate. How about Jose Berríos? He pitched a scoreless inning in the All-Star game. In my eyes, no one else stood out against Kansas City, so I'm going to say Berríos. Text us at 81807. Now it's time to recap all the games from the past week, so let's get down to business. Hey, let's start on Tuesday night. American League 8, National League 6, a 10-inning All-Star game, the 89th edition of the Summer Classic, and the two teams combined for a record 10 home runs in Washington. And that's a lot of power, even in power-hungry D.C. Only one Twin played in the game. It was news for Berríos is that he did not give up a tater in his one inning on the mound.
Here's Contreras. Machado to his left gets the out, one down. Paez flips it into right. Mookie Betts has out number two. 5-for-8 with a home run. And he shoots one into center here. Back on the track and into the glove of Mike Trout.
And that's Joe Buck on Fox on Tuesday night. Jose Berríos on the mound, a 1-2-3 inning. So he was solid in his first ever appearance in the All-Star game. All right, the Twins returned to action on Friday. They took on Kansas City down at Kauffman Stadium in Missouri. The Royals win a squeaker as both teams get back on the diamond. It was a tough loss for the Twins because Kansas City entered the game with the worst record in MLB. The hitting hero was Lucas Duda, who connected in the sixth inning.
Now ready to go, and that ball's crushed to right field. And if it's fair, that ball is way out of here. On an 0-2 pitch. Wow. Duda's 8. Wow. Got all of that. A three-hit night for Duda. That was a fastball 91 crushed.
Yeah, it was a do-da-do-da day for Lucas Duda. How about Salvador Perez? He also joined the fun for the Royals. The All-Star catcher came up with a key hit in the seventh.
And the 0-1 pitch, line drive, left center field, towards the gap and down for a hit. It gets by Kepler. One run's going to score. Moustakas at third base. He's going to try to score. The throw in from left field will be late as Perez drives in two more, and the Royals now have a 6-1 lead.
And Kansas City pitcher Danny Duffy got his first win at the K in 11 months for the Royals. Again, Kansas City wins it 6-5 on Saturday last night. Royals 4, Twins 2. The lowly Royals win back-to-back games for the first time since May 29th and May 30th. Minnesota took the early lead courtesy of Eddie Rosario.
And the pitch, a swing and a line drive, base hit right center. That's towards the gap. This will score Maurer, and he's going to hold at first base, an RBI single. Two batters in, 1-0 Twins.
And despite being left off the All-Star team, Rosario continues to play like an All-Star. Meanwhile, Salvador Perez has started in five straight Midsummer Classics. Perez jump-started the KC offense when he played long ball in the first inning.
And the 2-2 pitch, a swing and a drive into right field and deep. That'll send Kepler back. Max still going. Warning track wall. That's gone. Two-out opposite field home run for Salvador Perez. And one swing of the bat. The Twins' lead is gone. It's 2-1 Kansas City.
Brian Flynn gets the win in relief for the Royals. Lance Lynn took the loss for the Twins. Then, today, game three of this series, Kansas City 5, Minnesota 3. Ouch! The Twins begin the second half of the season with three clunker losses to the Royals. Kansas City sweeps the series for the first time this season. Now, Minnesota took the 2-0 lead in the fourth inning. Brian Dozier knocked in the first run.
And long pause, and here's the pitch finally, and there's a line drive, base hit right center field. Rosario should make it to third easily, and he may be waved around. That ball's going to go to the warning track. Hitting third base, Rosario is being waved around. No throw to the plate. And a double by Dozier. Twins lead 1-0.
But Kansas City would rally to tie in the fifth and then took the lead for good in the seventh when ex-Twin Drew Butera circled the bases after a gamble by Jake Cave in center field.
From the stretch and the 2-2 pitch, line drive center field. Cave coming in. He dives and he misses the ball. It rolls all the way to the warning track. One run scores. Two runs score. Butera's to third. He's going to try to score. The relay throw from Dozier's on the way. Butera slides and scores. It's an inside the park home run, and the Royals have a 5-2 lead.
How about that? A catcher with the inside the park home run. That was the dagger. Royals were up by three. Twins tried to get back into the game courtesy of Max Kepler.
His 88th pitch is outside. Ball one to Max Kepler, who's 0 for 2. As he swings and hammers high and deep to right center field. Back it goes. Deep it goes. And gone, a home run. A line drive missile to right center field for Kepler. Twins answer back. That's number 12 for Max. And it's now a 5-3 game.
But that's as close as the Twins would get. Royals hang on and win it 5-3. And they complete the sweep over the Minnesota Twins, who are now on the season 44-53, 10 back of Cleveland. Kansas City, well, they hit the big 3-0 today. The Royals win number 30. They've lost 68. They're 24.5 games behind the Indians. All right, we're going to step away. But before we do, the fourth caller who can identify the highlight of the week we'll get two tickets to the Cleveland-Minnesota game on Tuesday night, July 31st at Target Field. Fourth caller. Remember that highlight I played earlier? Yeah, you better. That's why you got to pay attention in class. This is the Twins Week in Review on WCCO. Road trip starts out on a sour note for the Twins. They get broomed in Kansas City, losing all three. They're on their way to Toronto, Ontario, and they'll finish off the trip in Boston next weekend. Hey, Rich Johnson, you won those tickets to the Indians-Twins game on Tuesday night, July 31. Give us a call back, though. Shaletta's got to get your info, your digits. Give us a ring back, 651-989-9226. Or 866-989-9226. Rich Johnson, we want to hear from you. All right, it's now time to go down on the farm.
This week we go to AA Chattanooga. Larry Ward, longtime voice, joins us. And how have things been going for the Lookouts lately, Larry?
Well, I tell you what, in the last 5 days, not bad. That's 4 wins in 5 days, I think. If I remember right, we just won again last night. Third in a row here in Mobile with kind of a comeback, if you will. Xander Wheel popped a grand slam home run to really make the margin in a 9-2 win feel pretty comfortable for the last inning and a half. So, but typical fireworks night on a Friday, and a couple thousand folks enjoyed at least those if the Mobile fans didn't enjoy the loss, that's for sure.
All right, let's get up to date on some of the other players that might be familiar to Twins fans here. And there are some players that continue to have very good seasons.
Yeah, so far so good. It's kind of tough, though. Chris Paul on the DL, he jammed his finger, and it's still healing. And he was just really getting warmed up and going. But I think the fans are going to be kind of excited over the next couple, 3 years. Not only do you have the guys that are here, Brent Rooker and Xander Wheel, but you've also got a couple of youngsters that are making waves very early out of A-ball, and Luis Arias is one of those, and Jalen Davis is another. Arias, an infielder, he can play all four positions. Well, he's played three positions in the infield. I don't know about first base. And then Jalen Davis is one great outfielder. He's got a lot of speed, agility. Fits well. He's at almost 300 in the 25 games he has been here. And Arias still trying to figure out the hitting part, but he's getting there. So it's been kind of refreshing to have those guys come along.
All right, Larry, let's talk a little bit about the pitching and who's really stood out and who may be ready to take the next step.
I'm not sure. I think Omar Bencomo probably needs another crack at it. He's won three in a row now and looks very, very unbeatable, if you will. He pitched four perfect innings the other night and gave the looks a chance to put up four runs. And then he finally got tagged for two runs in the sixth inning. But he struck out the side after a couple of hits in the fifth inning. So he's really starting to pitch much, much better instead of just throwing like he was. He's got great velocity, but he's got a nasty changeup that will buckle these guys' knees. I'm telling you right now, it's fun to watch it because he'll, you know, a lot of hitters stand in. They're looking first pitch fastball. Omar Bencomo, who he was throwing first pitch fastball, every once in a while, especially a good hitter, he will throw that changeup on a first pitch, and it just befuddles the hitter. So Omar Bencomo's coming along great. I'll be honest with you, Lewis Thorpe, we thought, was headed that direction, and then he's kind of stumbled as of late. He hasn't quite been as steady and around the plate as he should be. And I think Ivan Arteaga's got some more work that he's going to work on Lewis Thorpe. But Dietrich Enns pitches tonight. He's 0-4. He's still trying to get his feet wet here, and he's got some experience. The biggest thing is the closing has been weak as of late, although this series a little bit better because of the team we're playing. Mobile's not high on the list of prospects, if you will. So I think pitching-wise, it's stronger than what it has been. It's starting to regroup. This is a team that's only won 10 games in the second half now, and it took a while to refind itself, to regroup. And the young kids that have come along, and Arias and Davis have helped out, and the veterans now, Wheel and Rooker, kind of lead the way by example.
All right, now Larry, it's one of those things where there's still time, but Chattanooga needs to stay on a roll. They've won four in a row, as you mentioned, and it's imperative if they're going to get back into the hunt that they stay on a roll right now.
Yeah, this is one of those things where you need that fantastic 30-game winning streak is what you need.
Yeah, and there you go.
It's always impossible. That's like having a cold one and a cucumber on your back porch, and it doesn't taste any better than anybody else's, and it's awful. And sometimes when you get going, your momentum catches up to you, and then, you know, you get a couple of losses. But I think the biggest thing here with these guys, I don't know that it's the wins and losses now that matter. Here's what matters: their development, getting better at what they do in this profession, whatever position they play. And I think that's Tommy Watkins, our manager, has kind of explained that. I saw him yesterday down on the field with a group gathering of the position players. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And I know Ivan and Javi have really stressed that, look, if you're going to play the next level, you have to get better at what you do here. That's how it works. And quite frankly, it looks like it's starting to, a little bit of that mud starting to stick on the wall, which is kind of great.
All right, Larry, always great. Once again, safe travels on the road, and we'll talk again soon.
You got it. Go Twins.
All right, there he is. Larry Ward, longtime voice of the Twins, AA affiliate in Chattanooga in the Southern League. We've got more on the way here on the CCO.
All right, thanks so much, Stevie T. As we go down on the farm, we do it every week here in the Week in Review show on WCCO, your flagship home for Twins baseball. Once again, Royals win today 5-3 over Minnesota. So the Twins will limp out of Kansas City and hope for better news in Toronto, beginning a series with the Blue Jays tomorrow night. You'll hear it right here on CCO. And then after the Blue Jays series, they'll play Toronto three times. It's off to Boston. Four games at Fenway and the Red Sox right now. 69-31. Nobody in Major League Baseball with more W's than the Boston Red Sox. So that's going to be a challenging series, no doubt, for the Twins. So anyways, the Twins will try to get back on track beginning tomorrow night in Canada. It's 5:46 here on WCCO. Today, final countdown at Kauffman Stadium was 5-3 KC, 5-4-0 for the Royals, 3-3-1 for the Twins. Keller the winner, he's 3-4. Duke took the loss, he's also 3-4. Peralta got his fourth save of the season. Home runs in the ball game. Drew Butera, an inside the Parker, 3-run home run. That really was the key blow for KC. Max Kepler hit his 12th for Minnesota. Twins will take on the Toronto Blue Jays beginning tomorrow night in Ontario. Welcome back to WCCO, final segment of the show on this gorgeous Sunday. And as always, we go outdoors at this time to focus on fishing with our good friend Steve Carney, who joins us now. And Steve, it's hard to believe, but we are into late July. And out on the lakes and rivers, these are the dog days, aren't they?
I just don't know. It maybe has something to do with that very late winter and then those early 90s we had in April into May that, you know, changed things. But so far it's been fairly good the last couple of weeks. I'm still finding walleyes up in 3 feet of water in the middle of the day. They normally shouldn't be there, but they are. Crappies are very scattered. I'm getting some on weed lines. I'm getting some suspended. But again, no concentration. So it's been, you know, kind of a project trying to get on fish.
Yeah, and weather certainly is always a topic here in Minnesota, but it seems like we've really run the gamut, as you talked about a minute ago, with blizzards in April, sauna-like heat, you know, into May. We had it last weekend as well. Can you remember a year where we've been on this kind of a roller coaster in this extreme of a fashion?
No, Eric, I haven't. In 50-some years on the water, I've never seen a year like this before. And it really bothers me because some of my inland lakes here in Wright County and Hennepin County, last year was the best walleye year I ever had on these lakes, within maybe 30 miles of the Twin Cities metro. This year, I have not caught one walleye in any of those lakes all season. And it's disturbing when it can be so good last year and then it totally shuts off this year. The only thing I can think of is there's an awful lot of bait fish out there. When you're throwing crankbaits and throwing jigs, you very often have 2, 3, 4 dozen small bait fish follow that lure back to the boat. And I'm seeing that in a lot of lakes. I think, from what I can tell, it's just an overabundance of forage. There's a lot of little perch, a lot of little sunfish, and there's plenty of food out there. So that's about the only thing I can think of other than the wacky water temperatures that we've, you know, suffered through this year. So hard to say for sure. I'm hoping this year is just sort of an aberration and we get back to normal next year. That's why I don't know what's going to happen into the fall. It's anybody's guess. So, you know, you just kind of roll with it and do the best you can.
We're going outdoors with Steve Carney. We do it every week on Sunday. And, of course, the focus is on fishing here in late July. And, Steve, I know you're off to central Minnesota later in the week. You have some favorite fishing spots out there, don't you?
Well, yeah, there's a lot to choose from. Right now, you know, the spinner rig is getting to be, you know, putting fish in the boat. That's basically About an 8 to 10 foot spinner. Blade color doesn't seem to matter, with a bottom bouncer and moving along weed edges from 10 to 14 feet. You can put a leech on there. I've kind of stayed away from crawlers this year, mainly because, again, with this abundance of small sunfish, they're tearing those crawlers apart no matter where I go, and you're spending all your time rebaiting all the time. So I've been using plastics instead. And you can put a 4-6-inch plastic worm on those spinner rigs. And well, what's nice about it is you don't have to worry about rebaiting. The bait fish will bang on it and bang on it. They won't, you know, remove anything of that plastic. It's very durable. And what it is, it's kind of a reactionary bait. These walleyes and bass and northern see that blade go by. They see the vibration, and it's kind of an instinctive strike. And if you're using a 4-inch worm, you can get by with a single hook. If you're going to use a 6- or 8-inch worm, you want to go to a tandem double hook, one in the front, one in the back. And it just seems as you get into these summer months, they really like that vibration, they like that sound, and it actually brings fish in from other areas. They can be 10, 20, 30 feet away from where you are, but that vibration draws them in. So that's going to be kind of my standard rig as we get into the hot days of summer. But still, the jig and leech has been working well right up, again, in very shallow water. Normally, that works very well in overcast and low-light conditions, but again, this year, I'm finding them in the middle of the day. With wind or without wind, it doesn't seem to matter. So, again, everything's really goofy. I wish I had an explanation why these fish are where they are, but it's all about, you know, moving a lot. You can't anchor. You can't sit on one spot for any length of time. You pluck one or two fish, and you have to move. So, you know, many times in the morning, I'll move 30 or 40 times and just, you know, get one here, get one there, and be happy with that. And that's, and in fact, a good example, Eric, the other day, I was on Lake Coronas, and I had a group in the morning, and I fished about 10 of my very best spots for nice crappies. The crappies are going very well on that lake. And I had a heck of a hard time, so I ended up having to fish new areas I've never been on before and try to pull it out of my hat. And I was able to later in the morning by fishing new spots because I had to. And that is kind of what's going on this year. These fish are not where they're supposed to be. So it's a challenge, and every day, you know, it's been that way. So it's, you know, makes you work harder.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's been one of those years, no doubt about it. All right, Steve, thanks for joining us. Have a good week on the water. Hopefully we'll get some good weather for you, and we'll hear your voice next week.
Sounds good, Eric. Great to talk to you.
All right, Steve Kearney, Outdoors Focused on Fishing, right here on WCCO.
Listen.
Jose Barrios.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.